Hello friends and welcome to Season 3 of the Endhits Records podcast. This is your host, Oise Ronsberger. This season we will talk in depth about B-Well's debut album, The Weight and the Cost. This is our second episode and today we will talk to guitarist Mike Schleibaum. Mike started touring with Battery at the end of the 90s and shortly after became one of the most respected metal guitarists when his band Darkest Hour enjoyed international success. He still tours the world constantly and lives in Washington DC with his family. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing good.
So, Mike, we are doing a podcast series. Every time Endhits now, you know, releases a new record, and we try to talk to the key people in the bands, you know, get a little bit of background information and, you know, dig deep into the record. And so this is your turn. I already talked to Brian, and now it's time to talk to Mike Schleibaum.
Exactly. Give me a chance. Put me in.
I wanted to go far back for a second. Do you remember when you met Brian McTernan?
Absolutely. Are you kidding me? That's the singer of Battery, dude.
So how did that happen?
Okay. The first time I actually had a conversation with Brian was he came to see a friend of mine's band play, this band Frotis. And, it might've been the first time we made eye contact and he talked to me, but I had seen he was in Ashes and he was the singer of Battery, who I loved, but you know, I hadn't seen a ton cause I hadn't really been to that many shows. So he was just sort of on my radar as a legend. And then I met him at the show where he came to basically watch my friends play. And, you know, he roasted everything about the set and left. And we thought he was awesome. So, but yeah, then I met Brian through his brother, Mike, who's a really good friend of mine. And basically through my introduction to Straight Edge Hardcore, which was budding in the, or well, I guess we'll say summer of 94, summer of 93, one of those years, you know, vegan straight edge hardcore was happening. There was a place called the Chamber of Sound. Also the Safari Club was called for a while that did shows. And those were, went to my first hardcore shows. And that's where I met this key group of people who is Mike McTernan, Ken Olden, Brian McTernan, and then a whole other kind of cast of other people, you know, Graham Land, who's also in Battery and Better Than a Thousand, and kind of my entire circle of friends that became my friends to this day, my friends from high school. You know, a lot of people who got into straight edge hardcore kind of had that same story, but that's sort of my beginning of my relationship with Brian was, we were both into this hardcore music and went to shows.
How much younger are you than those guys? Because I know Brian's already a few years younger than Ken is, right? Like, how much younger were you?
I'm definitely like, man, I think he's maybe 2 years older than me, or at least a year older than me, but I was held back a year in school. So I was farther back even one more year, like kind of developmentally. So Brian had moved to Boston, started his own studio, done a bunch of shit before I, you know, had really done anything. So regardless of the fact that he's only slightly older, you know, Ken is much older than both of us. So he had been doing a lot too. So there is a developmental kind of distance and also an age distance in the beginning. And it took a while for me to sort of be a person who went on tour and where it was in bands and stuff to really be not just like the young guy, but more of a peer, I guess.
Yeah. When did you join Battery then?
Man. All right. So summer of 98, or 99, whenever that, when did the Better Than a Thousand album come out? Was it 98, the summer of 98?
The first one came out in 97 and the second one came out in 98.
Okay, yeah. So Battery and a Bed in a Thousand did a tour in the summer of, I think, 98. I didn't Google myself, so 98 or 99, someone who's into hardcore trivia will know when Battery and Bed in a Thousand played Dynamo, whatever year that was. So basically, Ken had started, or he was doing Bed in a Thousand or whatever was happening, and I, in my opinion, what I think happened was they needed to sort of make it look like there was two bands, and Ken was always double tracking guitars, and there was like all sorts of stuff on these Battery records. So for whatever reason, they decided to add a second guitar player. And so for this specific tour, I think it was so that there seemed like there were two bands. Anyway, that tour was when I was asked to join Battery, and I had always been at the shows ever since I knew who the band was, in the front, trying to wrestle the mic from Brian, stage dive and have the time of my life. They knew I was enthusiastic. I had, you know, I was playing in Darkest Hour. We had recorded some things with Ken, actually. So Ken knew that I could play guitar. I knew I was vegan straight edge. I'm not really sure what the other criteria was, because I didn't really know Brian. I knew Mike, you know, I mean, I guess I knew enough of the crew, but there wasn't a lot of preparation. I remember that first show, wherever it was in Germany, I was terrified, and it was crazy how electric it was, and I was addicted. That was it. And that was when I was asked to join Battery, and
you got the ticket to Europe immediately.
Oh yeah. You don't even know. I skipped all of that. Dirt floor, living, whatever. When I got there, it was a tour bus. It was like 25 different t-shirt designs, a whole spread. I mean, we played this thing with like Pantera, Death. Dynamo is legendary. I was at that show because of Battery. I can't believe it. And we did other fests. We played with Run DMC and Refuse and on that tour. At some weird festival. And for a person, I turned 21 on that tour, so it changed my life. I was in college. No, wait, I was about to go to college, but I knew that I was in love with being in music, you know, but I didn't know anyone who was like making it or anything. But after that tour, it totally made me, you know, that summer, it made me believe like I could do a band. Like I could take my band Darkest Hour. We could go on tour and we could make music. You know, it was weird because I think I could tell that everybody wanted to do their own thing after the Battery tour. I would have loved to keep going, but it just seemed like at the in the end of that specific tour that summer, Brian was off to do the studio thing. I think he'd been burned by Milltown. Ken was like all headfirst into Better Than a Thousand, and so I just went into Darkest Hour, and that really was the beginning. You know, that's when I joined Battery, and also when Battery ended for the first time.
Funny enough, so you know, around that time, my friends Yvonne and Marco, who you know from Avocado Booking, they also had the label Join the Team Player Records, as you also know. So we are sitting around in the living room, and they told me, we are putting out this record by this band Darkest Hour from Washington DC. And I was like, who are those guys? And they're like, do you remember the guy from the Battery show? And I was like, I knew exactly what they were talking about, because that was my introduction to Mike Schleibaum, the Battery Better Than a Thousand show in Munich, when you grabbed the mic and you were like super skinny at that point, short hair.
Whoa, hey, man. I do have long hair now, but I'm still like 145, man.
Yeah. You grabbed the mic. I remember that very dearly. He's like, yeah, I'm going to sing the next song. I'm not a fucking tough guy. Stop pushing people around in the pit. It's called Go Back to the Gym.
Oh, my God. I was trying to get those guys to let me do that again. Now, you know, but I think everybody's afraid now that iPhones exist. Like, and it was funny. Brian had totally wiped that out of his memory that we did that
every night, supposedly, right?
Yeah, I thought it was awesome.
You know, that was the selling point. That's why you got signed to Join the Team Player, because you were the guy that grabbed the mic and sang that song.
Well, I'm a big fan of Marco and Yvonne, and they were Darkest Hour's introduction to the underground punk hardcore touring world over there with Join the Team Player. We put out a split with Dawncore, a Hungarian band. And to this day, I'm so thankful for that introduction, because the whole European hardcore world, like that touring underbelly, it's, you know, I'm so thankful for it, especially now that I'm trapped in my house. I mean, I just did a European tour in January, Darkest Hour, touring the same style clubs with some of the same promote. I mean, we played Coney Island, we played some of the same places, you know, and I'm very thankful to have been introduced to that. And it was inspiring the first time. And I think it was one of the main reasons why we were encouraged to get Battery back together, was because of that feeling, you know, of playing like for the scene, that specific scene. And it is also, I think, which propelled Brian creatively to push to help create Be Well, you know.
Do you, like, with all those things you learned with, on those early tours, like maybe the first Battery tour, Darkest Hour, what were you able to bring with you when Darkest Hour, you know, let's, you know, lack of better terms, call it flirt with the bigger music industry, if that makes sense? Like, were you able to bring anything from that world to, you know, those tours with Machine Head and being signed to, you know, semi-major labels?
Now, was I able to bring that to what?
Were you, like, the ethics and what you've learned in those days, were you able to transfer that into that new world when, you know, Darkest Hour, you know, stepped it up into, you know, made bigger steps?
Oh, well, absolutely. And the things that are the principal foundation I hate to call it bigger steps, but let's just, you know, when you're touring in the underground where there aren't pre-sale tickets, there's no, you know, advertisements in anywhere, you know, it's just sort of like DIY. When you're doing that, and then when you're doing the, like, let's bigger or whatever world version of being in a band, the same things that, like, apply are, you know, are you prepared? Are you respectful of the people when you're at places? And, you know, do you do your best to, like, bring the best possible show and be, you know, professional and respectful? I mean, although I don't 100% follow those rules all the time, and I try to, those are the really the things that help you sustain success in both worlds. So I think the good thing about that training period of my life, even though I'm still there, is that it keeps you grounded in reality. And the other good thing about it is that it keeps you, you know, focused on doing, you know, doing the work, like going out there, putting on good shows, like making sure you're responsible, doing everything you need to do. And that keeps you focused on the right things instead of, like, where you can get dragged if you, once you get into these big rock tours and you have nothing to do all day, you can get dragged into some dark places. So I think the one thing that I've learned from A to B the whole time is that for me, I'm most positive and best when I'm focused and I'm working on something. And so I was excited to be a part of this band. And when I go on tour or whenever we do something, I'm in the logistics all the time. You know, I mean, I like to party and I like to do whatever, but I also like to take care of business. So for me, I think I learned a lot about how to, like, pivot and, like, survive and adapt when trying to, like, be on tours with Black Sabbath and Judas Priest and Machine Head, you know, and also how to just take a punch, man, because when you're on these big rock tours, you know, not everybody's Parkway Drive. No, not everybody's super cordial and willing to, like, help you and not in competition with you. Like, other bands are there. They have a business. They want to make an impression on fans. Other things matter to them. So it's like, you have to be able to really want this and stay focused on what are the positive things. So that's, I think, what I've taken from the whole, that experience is just, you know, to work hard and to stay focused on what I control and what I can bring every day, and also as a band to a show, mm-hmm. you know. But I'm not gonna lie, you know, with Darkest Hour especially, we get trapped in the stupidness of partying and getting wild and wilding out. But we also have been on tour a lot and have played a lot of shows. And any band that's done that will find that occasionally you're in that place, you know?
It's definitely not a straight road, right? It's more like a winding up the mountains road.
Yeah.
Were you around for that infamous Les Battery show in DC with H2O? Were you part of that?
Shit, man. You talking the hard, you asking the hard questions. Wow. All right. Well, hopefully don't lose any fans on this one. But yes, the infamous last whatever one. Yeah, I played it. I had to play a show and replace my guitar idol. My straight edge hardcore idol couldn't be there, you know? And
would you mind telling the story for the people that don't know it?
All right. So the story is this. There was a schedule conflict between Better Than a Thousand and Battery. And there was a Battery show in DC and there was a Better Thousand, you know, South American tour, which does sound pretty cool when I'm saying it, right? So the Battery crew, we were all very upset that, you know, we were going to have to go to H2O and tell them that we couldn't play the show that was confirmed because there had been a snafu with communication and Better Than a Thousand was going to be in South America. So the gauntlet was thrown down. We're like, so we'll play anyway. And, you know, when that's said as a band, that's a dangerous card to pull, you know? And I think it just sort of got like, oh yeah, well, you know, we committed to this. We're going to be there. We don't know how many more times we're going to play. I can't remember. I don't even think Brian, I don't know where Brian was living at the time, but I'm sure that played into some of it. So we were like, no, we're going to play this show. Like, we're not going to cancel like on these like really amazing people in our hometown. And me, I was like the world's biggest Battery fan. So I was like, man, cancel. No, I was like, parkour shows were the only thing that meant anything to me at that time of my life. And canceling a Battery show with H2O, I was not going to do that. So
it's funny, right? How that's not even an option back then. It was like,
you know, nowadays it's like there's so many ways you can, you know, things, communication can happen other than. But back then, you know, everybody was how they were and it just went down like that. And so we played the show. It was great. I don't know if a video exists, but I'm really embarrassed because I will tell you right now, I did not play those songs right. Now I have learned how to play the songs and there's no way I was playing them right.
Who was playing that show? Like it was Brian?
Me,
you,
Colin Barth on bass, pretty sure. Yeah, not Kevin. Yeah, Colin on bass. Wow, was it Kevin? No, it was Colin on bass. I can't remember. I know it was Jason Hamburger on drums, Colin on bass, me on guitar, and Brian singing. That's what I think it is. I'm sure didn't Brian do it in his podcast? He didn't answer that question.
So he got so sidetracked. So I had that on my bucket list. And I know who to talk to about this. Schleimbaum's
the man. There you go. Well, we had it. So I don't know how interesting that is to the rest of the world, but we played a show without Ken, and that Battery was sort of done. And then I think Brian obviously went through a really dark period in his life. You know, either you've played his podcast or you will. And so he sort of came back to music. And I'm not going to say sort of. I mean, I was there. I was in the trenches. It was hard to communicate with him sometimes because he had sort of moved on from music. And I was a reminder of that life. And I don't know. I was always on tour and gone anyway. Who knows? But I do know that Brian is a great friend. He's like an awesome person. And I feel bad when I hear the like interviews and stuff because like when I listened to his interview that he did with Toby recently, which is a long time after this will be aired, you know, I feel like, man, I didn't know him when he went through like his tough period when he was a kid and he went to the hospital and nobody came and all that stuff. Like, I didn't know him. I would have been there. You know what I mean? Like, cause he's a really great guy and a great friend. And so like, for me, if Brian is like, you know, we got to do this, we got to challenge ourselves to do this. I'm like, yes. And he has been there for me on like, You know, people don't understand the blood and energy he's put into these albums for bands that he's made for people.
How many albums did he produce with Darkest Hour?
Three. And three hard ones. Listen, three of the hardest ones. Okay. The introductory to the world, you know, Mark of the Judas. Yep. The follow-up to that, the sophomore record, which is always hard. So Sedated, So Secure. And then the album, The Eternal Return, which was put out on Victory Records. Victory didn't want to support in any way, didn't want to be involved. The band was embattled. It was like a whole thing. And he's the producer trying to pull this thing together. Like, and each time he put his soul into those albums, you know what I mean? And so I just couldn't believe that this guy who did that and was so brilliant when he's like writing with these bands, like when you are in a room and you're writing with Brian McTernan, it's fucking insane, because he'll have these ideas, you know, to do stuff, to change the chords, to change beats, to change the order of riffs, whatever. And it's incredible to be around that energy. So when he sort of like left music for a minute, I was like, what the hell, you know? And we would get into arguments sometimes about like, and this is just my impression of what his opinion was at the time, was like, what, like, why are you still doing this? Like, losing all this money and Darkest Hours, like, you're either hot or you're not. Like, how are you, would you do this? All your guys are crazy in your band. Like, and so I just was kind of always on the sideline. Like, dude, you got to do music. You got to do a band. You got to do a band. You got to do Battery again. You got to do a band, you know? And so I think something happened in his life where he wanted to do music inspired by his daughter. And that door, that window of opportunity to do Battery again opened, and he contacted me about it. And I was like, man, however intensely you want to take this, however crazy you want to get about trying to reinvent the band again, I'm down, because I love Battery. Like, I'm not vegan straight edge anymore, but I love those songs and I love that world and I love that culture. And I'm happy to go right back there as the artist that I am now and go, fuck yeah, this is like sick. This should always exist, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was inspired to like, to push right with him when I saw that spark was there. And I think, again, Be Well is a product of that too. And I guess to sum up where we were at with the Battery story, is that was sort of the same thing, where it was like there was this energy around the whole thing where like you're not, no one can stop this, like we're playing this show. And then after that we were shut down forever until Damaged City, you know. Oh no! Until Rev, and then that made sense. And then once we played well at Rev, it was there and it was tucked away. And then Damaged City came back up, and then that's when we hadn't gone back to Europe. And so, you know, if you want to get into the Battery story, that's when we had to change some band members and really had to dig down and dig deep and like reinvent the band again to be able to take it to where it was, on tour with H2O, on tour with Sound Revolution, you know.
Mm-hmm. Were you guys at that point already talking about Be Well?
At what point?
When you played those Battery shows in 2016, and was Be Well already, you know, on the horizon at that point?
No.
When did that conversation start between you and Brian?
Well, I think the main thing about Be Well was Battery has some songs that exist that are sick. Sick, you motherfuckers need to hear. It's like an EP. It's an EP, but it's not perfect. But they're Battery songs, you know. And I think we were in the middle of trying to write a Battery record. But the thing is that Brian, he's got a really distinct voice, and he's got a lot to offer. And I think the cage of where Battery was at, especially with the fact that you've got such a creatively loud personality of Ken Olden, you know, mm-hmm. I think that just, and I understand it put Brian in a place where it wasn't the most fertile ground to do a new project or a new version of him doing a band, because people need to understand he's been into music and he's been doing all these albums with these bands and crafting some of your favorite records, but he hasn't been on the stage. You know, And he hasn't made a new band in that sense, that where he's the focal point. So I think the important thing was to find the best, again, like fertile ground for that. And as we were digging into the battery sort of formula, it was good, but there was these other ideas that were like really good. And so I guess at some point I encouraged Brian to keep going. So I will take whatever brunt of like being the splinter between battery and Brian starting to write stuff that just took it to a new place. Right. And the thing is, because I've been the like creative nucleus of a lot of bands, right? But I will tell you that that is not all that it takes to make an awesome band or awesome song, awesome record. Okay. I used to think it was, right? Like, oh, I could do this whole Dark Star record myself. But now I know you need that special sauce of other people to churn it up to make it really magic, you know? And so when Brian and I started going down this road of collaborating to where it would become Be Well, my role was to try to be the most fertile beginning. Okay. There is other people whose role have been to be confrontational, and I'm really good at that. That's my favorite role. Trust me. Sometimes I just become confrontational because I like it so much. But for this project, it was really like, I was like, man, that's awesome. Man, that's awesome. I'll try to write. You know, I'll try to do this. What about this? And then as we started to write stuff that was so good, and batteries started to just become like obvious that to break out of the mold and do something new was going to be so hard, that those two paths just became clear. And I think it's cool because now you'll see Ken is on to now championing Better Than a Thousand, which is a great band and a great record and a great era. And Brian is where he needs to be, where is it's like creating this thing that is his, but also ours, you know, it's our band, but I'm saying like creating something that is different from battery. And that's what I mean by his, you know what I mean? Because another thing that's maybe hard for people outside of the thing to understand is like the circle, you know, of being the stupid band stuff is that when you're the singer of a band, you're really attached to the identity of it, you know? So it's hard to start a new one. And so I think there was a lot of challenges, you know, especially being older, but I think when people get this record, they're going to be really happy with like the masterful way that we've navigated that.
How do you, like, you're in a band with Darkest Out and constantly creates, constantly moves forward, you know, not afraid of taking chances. How do you feel like about, let's say, you know, that nostalgia trip that a band like Battery is on, like, and there's no real, like, they don't have to write music. You know, they could play those old songs like over and over again, and people probably wouldn't mind. You know what I mean? Like, and also being stuck in that time period, especially for a guy like Brian, like, people will always look at him as the guy from the cover of Until the End. You know what I mean? Like, there's this snapshot, and people probably don't want him to change or be different. Like, how do you feel as an artist?
But see, that guy, that's so, that guy that's on the cover, he's always going to be there because that is Brian, you know what I mean? And I think it's okay. Like, it's so crazy because it took me a while to come to this realization, and it wasn't till I saw some like really well respected DC punk icons arguing about it at a party that I realized like, oh shit, I'm wrong. But like, as an artist with Darkest Hour, I've always tried my hardest to not be dated, you know, into a period, to try to take risks, to bust out of that, to stay away from nostalgia. And now I realize that not every band has to do the same thing. I think with Battery, what we did well when we came back was we championed nostalgia in a way where we did it better musically than we ever did it before. I mean, when Battery came back on Sound of Revolution and then later on our tour with H2O, if anyone who ever saw the band saw us, we sounded better in a sense of more like anything recorded you've ever heard than we ever did before. The band had plenty of energy, and I stand behind all of those shows. It was, in my opinion, you know, a lot of wins, you know? Sure. And I think that's what we did really well. And I think the only thing you can do with something that's special like Battery is champion it in sort of nostalgic way, because that's where it exists. It's not connecting necessarily to a lot of young youth crew, vegan straight edge hardcore kids the way that we were in the 90s. We weren't there, but it still connects with people about relationships, friends. There's a lot of stuff in those lyrics that are universal that are not gonna, that are gonna exist as long as hardcore does. So I think championing Battery as in enjoying the nostalgia around it is 100% okay as an artist, as long as you do it with respect to what it is, you know? So that means not overplaying, not running around with a whole ton of straight edge merchandise everywhere, even though, you know, I still think it's fine for a Battery shirt to say straight edge on it, but that's a whole other debate that we can get into, even though we never did that, that we never did that. Okay. I just want to point that out, that none of the merch did that. And it was just like, we kept it respectful. And, like I said, we played great, looked great. The band, did their best to give everyone there as much as we could. And in the end, I think also we gave everybody a brand new song. You know, My Last Breath is one of the best Battery songs ever. And we unleashed that on the world to just be like, we love hardcore, here you go. But I think creatively, for all these great, you know, open, loud personalities like Ken, Brian, and myself, I think the trajectory everybody's on right now is the path that is to, you know, the most enjoyment for everybody and the most music for everyone else.
When Brian, you know, started writing, and when did you realize how dark those lyrics are, like, and how, yeah, from and how much pain he was in when he wrote the lyrics for Be Well?
Oh man, it's crazy. Like, sometimes it's so I think about myself, but then I also think about Brian's brother, because I've been at these Battery shows where Brian will just be tearing his soul apart. He's so brilliant at it. But at the same time, like, what he's talking about is so personal to Mike and to some of us. Like, it's like, he's talking about him, you know? So these lyrics, everything, etc., it's so dark and it's so personal to him that it's so hard for me to sometimes digest it, that what I need to do is I have this armor of, like, because when our relationship is, I'm sort of like, we have this push or pull, like, if I'm negative, he's positive, and if he's positive, I'm negative, and it works really well sometimes, and other times there's fireworks, but most of the time it works pretty well. So I just go into this kind of like, well, you know, Brian is the most driven, focused, organized person. This is some hyperbole. This is symbolism. He's great at crafting words. But then, you know, I think about it and I'm like, shit, it's fucked up, you know? And I don't know why, because to me the whole time, I feel like I've been in that story, you know? And I'm just like, the whole time I'm like, but dude, you've got this talent. You've got this daughter, got this wife that's been behind you forever, got this beautiful house, you know, shit ton of dogs, chickens, cats. But, you know, but when people see depression who don't understand depression, you know, because I've never battled depression. I've battled anxiety, and they're totally different enemies, you know. Like, it's, you can judge people, and I'm sure I did that in some way, but I think, again, it's just armor, because you're so close to the story, you don't know what to say other than like, but it's not so bad, because like, that would mean that our story is so bad, and it's not, you know, like, this is cool. But I think it's important at our age to sort of express that, because what I've seen with the band is that Brian went through this hard time, and the way that he's been able to cope with it is what I've found works with me, which is create art. And he's created great art and he's focused on it. And he's gone to where he's always been happy as a kid, you know? And I think that's given him great relief. And it's also allowed him to give this gift to other people, which is that their ability to connect with this grief that he's feeling and all these stuff that he's got going on. So I think that, like, in a lot of ways, it's where he needs to be, because he's connecting with these people and it's really creating something positive, even though it obviously has to come from a place of churning up all this brutality.
You kids are almost the same age, right?
Well, Cassidy's like 30. No, she's she's a little bit older, but she's very mature, and she's, you know, there's a few year age difference, but there's a pretty significant developmental difference. So he's more dealing with like pre-adolescence, and my daughter's just on the edge, but they're pretty mm-hmm. close. You know, we both have one daughter, so we're similar.
Did that help you like understand him and what he's going through and what he's expressing, especially on the Be Well record right now, like being a father to be having a daughter?
I mean, being a father has pretty much helped me, you know, do anything. I would be a total feral train wreck without some kind of anger. So I'm grateful for all of the ways that having a kid has forced me to like harness my collective energy into something positive. I'm trying, because I'm not saying I'm changing this, but like, you get where I'm coming from. Like, having a kid, I thought in the beginning would be one of the biggest hindrances to me trying to become a professional musician. And in the end, having a kid and a solid family life, I might add, has been the number one pillar that has allowed me to stay in the game, competitive, creatively progressing, everything, you know? So I totally understand like wanting to make your kid proud, wanting to leave something for your kid to remember you by. But, you know, me and my daughter, we obviously have a different relationship than Brian and his daughter, because everyone is different. And, you know, so I can only speak for mine and say that like she knows all about daddy being in a band. Bands coming over to the house. I got a home studio here. She's been in school of rock for little kids ever since she could remember. I used to like sub teach over there. She's, you know, music is like Jackson 5 style over here. It's just something she's done since she was a kid. It's a whole family mm-hmm. thing. But I think since Brian did a pretty good job of trying to hide that part of himself for a while, and I think it's blossomed a little later in his family, and it's obviously really great, because I'm guarantee everybody will say the same thing, which is that the best, the happiest Brian is one that's creating and doing what he's doing right now, you know, and he'll tell you that himself.
Do you find it like you put so much hard work into bands all your life? Like, you know, the work that needs to go into a band to even get it to an acceptable status. How hard is it now at your age with your responsibilities and, you know, everybody in the band, or the people that I know in the band, which would be Brian, you and Aaron, all of you have kids, like how hard is it to focus on the band and get the band off the ground?
Well, I think to understand Be Well, you also have to bring in Shane and Peter, mm-hmm. who are the other two names you didn't mention, but it's a, you know, each band is a different little organism, right? And I told you about my love for confrontation. Well, that's my darkest hour family. Like, we have been together for so long that we just jump right into confronting each other, and it's just roast and just everybody's intense. But it is a deep love, you know? Whereas Be Well, it's different. Like, we don't want to have that vibe. Like, nobody wants to have that if they can help it. So, you know, Peter and Shane, they were in a band together called Fairweather, and they sort of have this brother bond. And I was in a band with Shane called Nitro Tokyo that was just like a fun rock band. So we sort of have this, like, we can hang out and just, you know, just spending time together mm-hmm. is fun, you know? And Brian's, you know, one of my closest friends of all time. So you throw that in there and all of a sudden you throw Dahl back in the mix, who's just a good time all around. And I've known now Peter and Shane didn't know that well until now, but it's just a great mix, mm-hmm. you know? So once you have like those personalities all together, really that is kind of what really pulls it into a place that makes it easier to do now as an adult, I guess we'll say, because so much of being in a band is the time that you get to spend with each other. And that's actually the fun part. And so if you can spend it with like other people who are around the same age as you, going through the same things in life and have fun together, that camaraderie, I mean, that's really the special part of being in a band. So I think what I'm thankful for and what's allowed us to pull this together is that joy of getting together and being together. And that is what makes all of the hard work, I would say in parentheses, that you put into being a band when you're older worth it. Because I used to think I had no idea that when I would get older, being that band practice would be one of the only times I would interact with some of my friends, you know, because other than that, I might end up just at a bar with them or drinking. You know, but now that everybody's older and a lot of them with kids and a lot of them without kids living in a different sort of time plane, like, it's hard to spend time with people. So a lot of ways that is like sometimes your friendships as you get older. So, that's what's kind of been the foundation to pull this from just some songs that we were able to record to like a band that can go play a show with songs that have meaning.
So Brian, the way you described Brian at the very beginning of the interview, you said he was, you know, a few years older than you. You looked up to him, obviously. Then he became the producer of your band. Was that hard to be in the band with him now, be a bandmate, plus having him produce the album? Was there conflict there?
No. Because I think you left out one element of our relationship where I mentored under Brian for a long time at his studio. And again, I mentioned to you about my love for confrontation. So I think that like, and also there have been times where I think I've won Brian's trust enough that it doesn't feel like I'm just talking to a blank wall who doesn't respect anything I have to say. You know, it's not like the mutual admiration doesn't go both ways. Otherwise, nobody wants to be in a band with someone who just like likes everything you do and just says, ah, cool. You know what I mean? Especially people who are as smart as Brian, because really, really smart people, they tend to like fight themselves if they don't have anybody to fight sometimes, you know? And so I think that for me, it was not hard to step into the role of being in the band because I'm such a dominating figure in Darkest Hour. And then the reason why it was so hard for me to fit in Battery is I didn't know where to go because Ken is right here and he's very loud creatively and Brian's right here and he's loud and they both have great ideas. And then I don't know where to go. And sort of, I feel like I don't know what to do. But with Be Well, I knew exactly what to do, which is go, no, this is good. No, this is good. No, that part's really good. No, I think this. No, I think that. Oh, you think that? Well, okay. Well, I trust your opinion. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And then once you're in there, I mean, you're in the band. So, and I think once we brought in Dahlback, who has had a long relationship with Brian and Shane and also Peter, once they all started feeling like comfortable enough to occasionally put some criticism out there and some constructive criticism out there, that's when the relationship really took off mm-hmm. actually, because it wasn't, and it was, you know, in the beginning, everybody's like, ah, this is cool. And then all of a sudden Shane's like, I don't really like our name. So we changed the band name, you know? And then it was like, oh, then it felt real. You know, and then because we had a project name or whatever, we were kicking names around, and it was you know, I was just kind of like, well, maybe that's cool. Maybe that's cool. Kind of doing my Elastic thing. Not sure. Do I let Brian push the name or do we need to push back? And then Shane pushed back hard. And then it was, you know, then I remember me and Peter sifting through some other sets of stuff and being like, oh, what about this? And so I think there was a lot of collaborative stuff that happened that I think along the way makes it feel like ours together. Mm-hmm. And I also think that although Brian has great ideas and is really a clear direct force, he is not afraid to let other people have ideas and let ideas exist that aren't his if they're good. So I think once you've seen that's trusted, you know, it all comes together and, you know, you're like, whoa, this is a healthy relationship of a band. This is going to be sick.
Yeah. Brian mentioned that before, you know, the final lineup was completed, you tracked a few songs with the current Darkest Hour drummer, right?
Yeah. Damn. Yeah. And, okay.
And he said you pretty much scrapped the recording because he thought it was too perfect. It was too straight.
That's my boy Travis, dude. He doesn't do anything upper.
Was that a source of conflict for you or conflict of interest?
The hardest thing about doing bands now, you know, in your 40s, is that the people's appetite for rejection is just not there anymore, you know? But in your 20s, man, I mean, musicians out there, how many times do you jam with someone and it worked out, didn't work out, this or that? You know, that's what it is. That's how you find out about bands. But now, the advent of the internet, everybody's at a band practice, live streaming it or whatever, all the stuff, like now it's a big deal, you know? And so what did I do? And Brian was like, I need a drummer. I went and found the best drummer in the fucking world, in my opinion, Travis Orban from Darkest Hour. Now, unfortunately, he was not the best drummer for Be Well because it was intense. There were times where the punk beat sounded like Darkest Hour, even though it's the punk beat because it's on top of shit and heavy metal, you know? And then we had our buddy Andrew from Battery jam on some stuff and our buddy Pat, who other friend of ours. And we were like, shit, this feels way better. I mean, they can't play double bass like Travis and shit, but who cares? And Brian's like, I don't care, you know? And so we were searching for a drummer who had all these things. And then as I brought Peter into the fold, Brian said, well, hey, what about Shane? They were in a band together. And I thought, well, he's in Richmond. That's so far away. And then as we thought about it, we're like, well, no, he's perfect. And I said, he is perfect. He's got that rock feel. He's a stand-up awesome dude. I can call him in 2 seconds and talk to him. Like, there's like, we've known each other forever. Darkest Hour and Fairweather have played for years together. I'll call him up, you know? And so once that started happening, yeah, I realized, you know, again, it's just this other reminder that like, not everyone's perfect for every project and not everybody's feels perfect for everything. And so as a musician, you have to be humbled and be like, well, I want to be a master of everything. So I need to try to be able to be good at what I'm bad at and, you know, better at what I think I'm good at. And I do think Travis could learn to play anything, but I think also all of the scheduling insanity and everything else on top of what Travis is doing, on top of the feel, on top of everything, it just didn't feel right. And I didn't think we wanted to put out a record without the band being on it. So I think that's as much of scrapping it, as much of it not sounding good or whatever, you know, sounding right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, when you're working with someone that's as talented as Brian McTernan, when we say something didn't sound good, let me tell you, it sounded good.
It's a different level of not.
It just didn't
sound
good enough. Oh yeah. Yeah. It's painful, man.
What do you think are the, you know, the biggest influences on Be Well lyrically and musically?
Okay, the biggest, you know, are you asking like what bands or what things in general?
I mean, bands and things. What makes it a thing, you know? Like, okay, what's your reference if you think, you know, the context of Be Well? What surrounds the band and what influences the band?
Well, like I said, I think the beginning of what influences the band is the sound of when Brian McTernan or, you know, I don't want to say just Brian because it also is like when I pick up a guitar, but I do so many things on guitar. So it's like, I guess it's terrible to say, but the beginning of it is to me what it sounds like when Brian plays guitar to me, you know? Mm-hmm. And then what you're hearing through that is his love for emotional, melodic hardcore, you know, everything from Embrace, Rites of Spring, early DC stuff to the later stuff, Strike Anywhere, Hot Water Music, albums he made, you know, Cave-In, Circus Survive. Like you hear all of those albums in the album all of a sudden, because that's his voice in those albums, like reflecting back now, you know, and it's all starting from him, you know, playing. And then the other thing that makes Be Well is the community around it. So you have like what we experienced this summer on tour with H2O and what we experience when we play shows. And that is a really big reason, you know, for doing this band, is connecting with people lyrically, socially, getting out there in the world, traveling, you know, all the same reasons why Darkest Hour has stayed a band. You know, we love to be tourists of the world, both socially and, you know, visually. We like to experience friendships with people all over and see things. So you have this drive for 40-year-old men to to get out and create art and see the world, plus their intrinsic love for melodic hardcore, because it is what they, you know, play when they pick up a guitar, because it's what they love the most, you know what I mean? And mm-hmm. then you combine it with the challenge that these, you know, elder statesmen of rock might want to face, you know, emotionally, by like trying to really grapple like with things that are happening in your life and write them down and leave art and leave a message that can be remembered and is important in a time where like so much music is fodder for content, you know? So you have all of those things coming together. You have five unique people who all are trying to be family men, you know, trying to be out doing the right thing, but also still trying to create, trying to, you know, find a space in their life where they can travel and still play that hardcore show, because to them that magic feeling is important to still have, you know? And I think when you churn all those things up, you get Be Well. It's not as simple as saying for fans of Rites of Spring, Strike Anywhere and Hot Water Music, you know what I mean? It's like for fans of those bands, but for fans of that culture and for fans of music in general, that hopefully brings people that might've felt like outsiders together. You know what I mean? Like you know, for all types of people that might feel like they're on the outside, you know what I mean? Whereas like a band like Darkest Hour is for those people, but it's also clearly for, you know, some really angry people that want to fucking lose their shit. You know what I mean? Be Well is for, you don't have to be like that. You don't have to be, not saying you have to be like that for Darkest Hour either. I back myself in the corner, but you know what I mean? Like,
I know when you,
this is, something different. It's not, totally dependent on moshing and a light show to make this connection. And Darkest Hour, it's a little more physical. And I think what we're going for here is something that's a little bit more emotional. And I think you can feel those things when you see the band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm actually really excited to hopefully see the band live soon.
Oh, we're coming.
Really excited for the record to come out.
Oh, I'm excited for people to hear it. We've been working really hard on it, man. And now it's in the fun part. And now we're sort of camped out and parked in place until it's time to go. But we'll be ready as soon as they open the gates, whenever that is.
Whenever that is. I think that's a perfect time to wrap it up. I think this was a great interview. I think we covered a lot of ground, a lot of insights. So thanks a lot for taking the time.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, again, I tried to change as many names as I could to protect the innocent, but you asked some tough questions and man, I just tried to tell the truth, man. So
thank you very much for listening to the End Hits podcast. If you enjoyed this episode as much as we did, please send us feedback, share it with your friends, subscribe to the podcast, or give us a review. Stay safe and take care.